listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Happy New Year from the Tennis.com podcast. We're back again for another go-round. Myself, Ed McGrogan, am here, as always, with Steve Tigner. Steve, basically, the question begs, we just ended this, and we are ready back again a few weeks later. To me, honestly, compared to some past seasons, even though the interval between the end of the last season and the start of the new one is generally about the same, it does feel actually to me like there has been some separation from the removed season. Maybe that's because we're getting some players back that are healthy. I think a lot has actually changed, quite honestly. We'll get into that certainly with the WTA side in a bit, but I think I'm a little more ready for this season than usual. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think, technically it should be longer, the off season, and maybe it should go even, should go into March or whatever. But when it comes back after a break, I always feel good about that first week and that sort of feeling again of a new year. I think you can tell that the difference in, at least for me, in how long the women have off as compared to the men. And I feel a little more interested in the early going with the women and what's going to happen. It feels a little more like a new season there. They take about three, they're done their season about 3 weeks earlier than the men. And I think it does make a difference. And not that the men are going to, can scale it back anymore, but I think you can see, to me, you can see that more time does help. Like, I feel like with the men, we're going to get, this week we could get another Djokovic-Murray match. That doesn't seem, it wasn't very long ago they were playing for last year. That doesn't seem like much that's new. Whereas the women, you get Kerber, Serena, Radwanska, Halep, everybody out there. That sort of feels like, all right, we're starting all over, starting fresh with a new year on that side. So I feel like there's a little more early excitement to me on the women's side.
So let's start with the WTA then, and let's start at the top. We should with Angelique Kerber, like you said. This is when her year, her last season got started, and it really started taking off from this point forward. As the Australian Open champion, we were really brought into a new WTA dynamic very quickly last year. And before we get into what has been a very busy WTA past couple weeks, before we get into some of the other possible, the next Kerbers, if you will, I think we owe it to Kerber to start with her and just, her forecast really for this year. I mean, have her expectations changed, would you say? I think she answered every question and more last year, but really what does 2017 sort of hold for her?
Yeah, I think from how she'll handle being number one, I think she's shown she can do that. By the time she had, she won the Australian Open and she had a little dip, but by the time, Wimbledon, the Olympics, the US Open, and then the year-end championships, she made the finals of all of those and looked like she really thought she should win those tournaments. I don't think she'd ever thought that before, but I think by the end of the year, she'd settled into her role. I guess the question to me is, she'll never have a game where she'll always have a game that she can be overpowered by somebody who's playing well. She, no matter what she's doing or how nervous or not nervous she is, her sort of, somewhat defensive game always lends itself. It's always vulnerable to a player who's really playing well, like at the Olympics, Puig, the year-end championship, Sybil Kova. I think that'll always be the issue for her in the big matches. And that's not going to change I don't think that's going to change no matter what her mentality is.
Yeah, and I think that, one thing about Kerber that we will continue to emphasize throughout the year, I think it may bear itself out, is that, and you've mentioned this before, even as a number one, she is still reliant on in large part, many more than many other number ones, what her opponent does or does not do. And In terms of her competition this year, I really kind of break it down almost into two groups, and I don't want to sort of simplify it that way just for this discussion, but it seems to me that I'm kind of looking at the WTA rankings. I noticed that numbers 3, number 4, and number 5 in the world, which are Agnieszka Radwanska, Simona Halep, Dominika Sabalenka, all three of them have never won a major title. All three of them, though, you could certainly surmise if a number of things go their way, if they play up to their potential again, that really maybe they are sort of the next Kerber, if you will, someone that is, again, off of the traditional run we've had of champions, major champions on WTA Tour. All of them, I think, have their pros and cons. You have really incredible shot making. You have some guile. You have really kind of an all-around game represented by these three players. And I wonder if we might want to kind of group them up and discuss them a little bit.
Yeah, I think you look at those three, Radwanska, Halep, and Sibulkova, especially the first two, Radwanska and Halep, and they have to look at what Kerber did last year and think, well, that can happen to me, at least winning one slam, if not finishing number one. They're about the same age, maybe a year younger, a couple years younger than Kerber. They have comparable games. They've been to slam finals. They were, I think, until last year, they were probably considered more likely to win majors than Kerber. So I think they can, I think they'll take something positive from that. And I think they did last year. Each of them had a good year. Sibulkova obviously also had a really good year. And I think they'll be helped by some of the things that have happened to some of the other contenders in the offseason. Victoria Azarenka, who we would be talking about as potential number one, had a baby and won't be playing for a while. Petra Kvitova had a horrible situation where she was attacked and she'll be out for 6 months. She's always a threat. And Serena is still number two after playing just 8 tournaments last year, but she's 35 and she's talking about getting married. That who knows whether that's something where she's thinking about leaving the sport or that's on her mind, sort of the end of her career. She's not going to be what she was 2 years ago or 5 years ago. So I think you look at all of that as an opportunity for people like Radwanska, Halep, and Sibulkova, like you said.
Yeah, and that goes into really the other group of players, that I would consider the great competition, really for the number one ranking, whomever has it at the moment. Kerber, of course, but if you look back at last year, and it was obviously Kerber's year, but it was also, really ruled in intervals by, Serena for a stretch, obviously at Wimbledon, and her, her presence is obviously, really undiminishable in a way. It's just, it's clear that she is always a factor there. And as you say, some late year news of her engagement now, we just, we wonder really kind of at her age, where things go from here. Clearly also, you have Azarenka, who you mentioned, who last year was, regardless of the rankings, was clearly the best player in the world for a stretch, winning Indian Wells in Miami. And soon after that, taking a leave, of course, to have her first child. We don't really know when Azarenka is slated to come back. It would be only guesswork at this point, but given that she, given everything just happened pretty recently, and if you want to perhaps surmise that, given her success in hard courts, maybe sometime in the summer post Wimbledon would make sense, but it's all really guesswork at this point. Also, as you said, of course, Kvitova is really just incredibly unfortunate circumstance. Madison Keys will also miss the Australian Open. I think that's worth mentioning too. These, all these four players, bring that sort of ultra power game that is a great contrast to players like Kerber and players in that other group of Radwanska, Halep as well. So I think a lot is really unsettled at this point. And of course you would say that because the season just started, but it seems more so than usual. I think the Australian Open gets a bit of a more interesting tone because of that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think we'll see that a lot of the players, women players, are playing this week. I think, you know, there'll be some that'll tell us something as well going into the Australian Open.
Yeah, and you know, this week on the men's and women's side, you have very strong fields. Traditionally, the first week is a pretty, you get pretty good participation across the board. You're seeing it all over the world, mostly, of course, down in the Australian continent. We think about what this means to, on the men's side, the main news the main takeaway at this stage is that until proven otherwise, the men's game is, and the big four specifically, the tour is healthy at this point. And you could look at that last year from purely a physical perspective, where that really impacted Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, who both cut their season short. And surely from a mental perspective, too, of Novak Djokovic, who pretty much as soon as the French Open passed, you saw a different player, not that, invincible number one that we had grown used to for such a long time. And it's really, I think we're kind of almost hitting a reset button, if you will, on the big four, and really it obviously brings up a lot of questions too with them. So where do you want to start with the big four?
Well, I think you look at Federer and Nadal coming back, in the off season and last year, I sort of was having a hard time imagining Federer coming back physically and being able to stay with the younger players after being injured. But I thought that in the past, and he does, he sounds as upbeat as ever. I sort of feel like he will challenge for slams. 3 months ago, I would have said that's unlikely, but now just, he's good at creating his own momentum, his own sort of, positive kind of spin on where he is. And, it's believable because he's always bounced back and has always at least made semis and finals of Grand Slams. I think that's, I would be surprised if we don't see him, if not winning, at least challenging for these. And the same with Nadal.
And actually, just to stay on Federer for a second, too, I think that when you saw, the guy, believe me, I think he has always fed off and still continues to feed off really this unrivaled support that he continues to get around the globe. You saw it kind of really, this week in Perth, Hotman Cup, which is just beginning. Even in the practice session that he streamed over social media, to me that all that appearance of him, just loving the game and loving the continue just the sport in general is, it's never been anything other than genuine to me. And I'm not trying to sap it up, but I think it's pretty telling. It's almost harder to imagine a lot of other guys still at that age and after all that's been accomplished, still coming forth with that kind of, really just attitude toward everything.
Yeah. He's trying to tell us that this break will help him in the long run play for a couple more years. And that's possible. And I think this, I've had the same feeling early on now with Nadal. He looked good in the exhibition in Abu Dhabi. He seems healthy. You never know. I think I'll be interested to see this week and what his game is like and when it's a real tournament and when nerves come into it. It's obvious he still has the physical ability. Just watching him in that exo, he's got, the shots are all there. He hasn't lost too much speed at 30, but the big difference, obviously, is the nerves, which weren't there, which were never going to be there in an exhibition. We'll see if that changes again, because his recent history is that that's the big problem with Rafa. So we'll get some idea of that in the next couple of weeks. And then Djokovic, I had you know, through the second half of last year, he sounded a little, you know, as if he needed a break from the game. But he started out this year saying that he's happy with where he is. He doesn't consider the last 6 months a failure. He's looking at it as just another experience. He's talking about it as an incentive. And I think that'll be the key for him. I think if he feels like he really is desperate to be back at number one and really feels like he doesn't belong at number two, I think he'll get back there, because I think Djokovic is still the best player. It's just his mentality. He still has the edge on Murray, Federer, and Nadal.
Yeah, and I think what it's really a reset button for Djokovic in a lot of ways, but also this is, you know, Boris Becker now no longer in his coaching corner there, his stable, and Becker's comments in the, you know, as Becker has always shown, you know, the man does not have a filter at all, but some very, revealing comments, I thought, on Djokovic and really what he was and was not doing, to maintain that, incredible status that he had for so long. And if you take Becker at his word on really what Djokovic wasn't able to bring to the table in terms of pure tennis in the second half of 2016, you can kind of, really rationalize why things went the way they did.
Yeah, he talked about how he wasn't on the practice court enough. I hadn't really heard much about that, but you have to believe it if it's coming from Becker. And I think, but, midway through the year last year, Djokovic talked about how he wasn't going to focus on being number one anymore. And if that's his attitude, then you don't know. But if he really doesn't like where he is being number two and is really motivated to get back to number one, I think he'll get there. There's nobody really who's going to stop him game wise. Murray's obviously better, but I think you still have to give the edge to Djokovic in their head to head.
Yeah, and as you said, it's there is a very high chance that we'll quickly get the latest installment of that rivalry. They're both they're both playing in the same event in Doha, and it's the season, as we say, it starts up quickly, very quickly in terms of players, in terms of events. The volume is there. There's plenty to see. We don't really have to wait till the Australian Open to see it. And I think we should close, since it was, we haven't been on the pod for a little while. Anna Ivanovic calls it a career. Just last week, this is, the latest in kind of a very, very busy off-court week or two for the WTA. Clearly this one affecting the on-court will be, through with seeing Ivanovic in her career. Only 29 years old, but so much has, between all of the highs and lately, some of the lows that were, I think more documented than the highs, particularly you had that, that wayward service toss that just, she couldn't really just shake off for a lot of the latter half of her career. It seems like a long time ago when we saw Ivanovic, reach three slam finals in the span of 2 years, but, obviously, one of the, a great career nonetheless, from start to finish.
Yeah. You kind of forget that she was number one. She won a Grand Slam, so it wasn't, she backed that up with a slam. It wasn't sort of one of the slamless number ones. So that adds to that. Adds to the status, her status. I think leaving, she's a star player. She was a big attraction, popular player. She's one of the people I think showed that players can get along and be friends and still compete. It was never her sort of philosophy or personality that she didn't want to, that competing was more important than being friends with people. Always a great player to talk to, great in press conferences, win or lose. I rarely do you see a player who is as good talking after a loss, as engaged, or, she would never really shrug off a press conference or get annoyed or bristle at any questions. And I think she was that way generally with people around tennis. I guess my thinking about her now, I wonder whether she belongs in the Hall of Fame. I think it's a question that could you know, it's a, I think it's a good question. She has two obvious reasons to vote her in. She won a slam, and that's been enough for a couple of people. Like Gabriella Sabatini won one slam, and Jannik Noah won one slam and made it in. And she also is number one, which those players didn't do. But on the downside is she had some very mediocre years, ranked in the 20s, a lot of bad losses, pretty up and down career. So I think it's, you know, I think that's something interesting, at least to, you know, to talk about in the future, whether she gets in.
Well said. Yeah, we'll debate that soon enough, and we'll return here on the podcast after this weekend's events. Surely quite a few results we'll be talking about next week at this time. So for Steve Tigner, this is Ed McGrogan, as always, for the Tennis.com podcast. Thank you for listening.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.